Read and hear more about important news and policy issues at ncpolicywatch.com. This is News and Views.
Welcome to News and Views. I'm your host, Rob Schofield. North Carolina is in the midst of what many have described as one of the most important midterm elections in memory. Despite the lack of any high-profile statewide races, voters are being asked to vote on all 13 congressional seats, all 170 members of the General Assembly, a key slot on the state Supreme Court, and a slate of six controversial constitutional amendments. Earlier this week, I sat down with one of the nation's best-recognized and most successful political pollsters, Tom Jensen of Raleigh-based Public Policy Polling, to get a sense of how things look with just over a week remaining until Election Day. Well, Tom Jensen, welcome back to News and Views. Good to have you with us.
Good to be with you, Rob.
You're one of the top pollsters in the country. Got any sort of overall takes, perhaps, on Congress as we look forward and how that plays out with North Carolina congressional votes?
I think it's going to be an unusual election in recent years in that both sides are going to wake up the morning after with something to be happy about and something to be unhappy about. Generally, when you look back at the last decade or so, there was sort of unambiguously one party that had a good year and one party that had a bad year. But I think we're headed for some split decisions. I think Democrats will take the U.S. House, but I think Republicans will not only keep the U.S. Senate, but probably increase their majority simply because so many of the seats that Democrats are having to defend are in states that Donald Trump won by 20 points or more. At the state level, it seems pretty certain that Democrats are going to increase their level of control over the Supreme Court with Anita Earls winning. But at the same time, probably most of the constitutional amendments will pass, which will be seen as a victory for Republicans. And then in terms of congressional and legislative seats in North Carolina, there's so many that are very close that either side could end up being happy. We have three congressional seats that Democrats could narrow the delegation to 7-6 Republican from its current 10-3, or it could stay 10-3, and it could be not very many votes separating 7-6 from 10-3. And it's the same thing in the General Assembly. Democrats will pick up seats, but it's possible that they'll be disappointed with how many seats they pick up. It's also possible that they'll end up picking a double-digit number of seats. So a lot of closeness.
So how big of a deal is Donald Trump in all of this? I mean, my sense over the last couple of years is that progressives have been just chomping at the bit to vote against Donald Trump. They've been so angered and frustrated and often disgusted by his presidency that they're— and this is really presents the first real large-scale opportunity. Is he still the big story of the election?
Yeah, I mean, definitely, I think, for the most part, the places that Democrats are going to make gains will track with how people feel about Donald Trump. So, for instance, when you think about the U.S. House picture, there's a lot of Republican-held U.S. House seats right now in districts that Hillary Clinton won. And Democrats are going to end up winning most of those House seats because I think people in those districts voted Hillary for president, voted Republican for Congress in 2016 to be a check on Hillary. Now Hillary's not president. This time around, they're going to vote Democratic to have a check on Trump. People generally do think that divided government is a healthy thing. So that'll be a big factor. And then it sort of extends down to North Carolina. Like the question with these close congressional seats in North Carolina, for instance, the premier House race in North Carolina is the 9th congressional district down around Charlotte. Donald Trump won that district by 11 points. So I think that the Democratic candidate, Dan McCready, is clearly a stronger candidate, more popular than the Republican candidate, Mark Harris. But is that enough to make up that Trump won the district by 11 points? Because Trump does still have a positive approval rating in places like that. So for someone like McCready, they actually have to win over some people who like Trump in addition to just getting the people who are mad at Trump.
Remind our listeners about what the situation is in Congress right now. How many seats do the Democrats have to pick up? What are the chances of that?
Democrats need to pick up 23 or 24 seats in the U.S. House to get a majority. Right now, when I look at the national picture, there's about 15 seats that I say, okay, Democrats have that. End of story. And then there's about 30 or 40 seats that could go either way. So we really are still in a situation where Democrats could end up picking up 50 seats and have a huge majority in the House. But there's also a world where they could come up short because so many of these districts are within 2 or 3 points one way or the other. And the reason we have so many more competitive races than usual this year is really rooted in Republicans winning the 2010 election across the country and getting to draw up the district lines. When you're doing a gerrymander, and this applies to both sides, but it was the Republicans who had the power this time around, you build up as many seats as possible where you have about a 10-point advantage, because you assume that if you have about a 10-point advantage, you can never lose. Well, this year, the country is about 8 to 12 points more Democratic than it usually is. So that puts all these seats that were drawn to be Republican plus 10 right on the line where if it's 12 points more Democratic than usual, Democrats will win a bunch of those by two. If it's only 8 points more Democratic than usual, Democrats will lose a bunch of those by two. And losing by 2 points in those districts is very impressive, but you either win or you lose, obviously, in terms of the seats.
If it's not Donald Trump, what are the big issues that are really motivating people to turn out that we see right now?
Well, I think Democrats definitely continue to want the biggest issue to be health care. Really, the birth of this being a strong Democratic cycle was in the summer of 2017 when Republicans in Congress tried to repeal Obamacare. Obamacare has become quite popular now. We find that people want it to be kept in place, even in states that are pretty Republican. The politics on that have totally shifted. So I think Democrats are trying to make this an election about pre-existing conditions protections and various things that Republicans might get rid of in the Affordable Care Act if they do continue to have total power. Republicans really are trying to make the issue culture wars. And I think the most effective culture war issue that they've had was the debate over confirming Brett Kavanaugh to the Supreme Court. That really galvanized Republicans, and I think could end up being what keeps Republicans in charge of the Senate, because in states like Tennessee and Missouri and Indiana and Montana that Donald Trump won by 20 points, those races were pretty 50-50 for most of the year. It looks like Democrats really had a fighting chance. And over the last month, some of those have started to sort of fade away to where Republicans have a 5-point lead or so. And really what's happened is you had maybe 20% of Trump voters earlier in the year were willing to vote for a Democrat for the Senate. And after the Kavanaugh debate kind of divided people back into their camps, now you maybe only see 12 or 13% of Trump voters are willing to vote for a Democratic Senate candidate in those states. And that's sort of how it shifted. You know, some Democrats are like, should we have fought over Kavanaugh? There's no point in having a party if you're not going to do things like fight over Kavanaugh. But sometimes there is a little bit of an electoral consequence.
What about the chance for last minute wild cards? Now, some of that's deflected by the fact that the elections are already underway. We now have the early voting. It's not all up to Election Day. But I suppose there are things that could still arise here in the last few days. We've got this immigration issue and this caravan working its way through Mexico. Is that something that we could expect the Republicans to trumpet?
Certainly to trumpet. I think Republicans know they're going to lose the House, so they're looking for anything sort of to throw a Hail Mary, and this caravan seems to be the Hail Mary, much like Ebola was the Hail Mary in 2014. But the thing about this election is that the people who are causing the blue wave are well-educated, sort of independent suburban voters, not the kind of people who are going to get really worked up over an immigration caravan. So most of the places where I think that this would have the effect of sort of galvanizing Republican turnout are places that are probably pretty Republican already.
We have limited time, but I do want to focus a little bit more on the North Carolina General Assembly, where right now Republicans enjoy enormous majorities, particularly in the Senate. But it's your expectation that at least when it comes to the supermajorities that have allowed them to pass constitutional amendments, override gubernatorial vetoes, that there's a good chance, at least in the House, that the Democrats will end that supermajority.
Very good chance. There's a ton of competitive Republican-held seats, especially in Wake and Mecklenburg counties. Republicans could end up having no legislators in both Wake and Mecklenburg County at the end of the election. But again, it's a lot of those races that are going to be decided by 2 or 3 points one way or the other, so they could also keep most of what they have right now. And Democrats do have some other good opportunities in other parts of the state. Joe Sam Queen, who's been in and out and in and out of the legislature, most likely will be back in after this election from the mountains. There's a highly competitive race in Alamance County where Steve Ross is the Republican incumbent. There's a very competitive race in northeastern North Carolina where Bob Steinberg has run for the Senate. So it's an interesting playing field across the state and a lot of races, again, that could go either way. But definitely Republicans having to defend a lot more than Democrats are, which I think means there's more than a 50-50 chance of Democrats breaking the supermajority.
And still unlikely that the Nixall 6 campaign against the constitutional amendments that so few people seem to even really have a grasp of, it seems that it's unlikely that, all the amendments will be stopped.
Yeah, right now it looks like 5 out of 6 of them will pass. I think the one that might not is the one giving the legislature more power over judicial appointments. Right now, Governor Cooper's at the peak of his popularity, 53% approval, only 23%. Disapproval. He was already pretty popular, but people really appreciated how he responded to the hurricanes. So that constitutional amendment's basically, do you want Roy Cooper, who you like to have more power, or do you want the legislature, who you don't like to have more power? I think if voters see it that way, that one may go down. But the rest of them sound good when you go and read it on the ballot, and that may be as much as a lot of people know.
Yeah, unfortunately, one or two sentences doesn't really capture the essence of a lot of what these amendments do. That's a topic for another day. Well, thank you so much. Tom will be speaking at a Crucial Conversation luncheon this upcoming week. You can check us out on ncpolicywatch.com to come to the event. Thanks for being with us, Tom.
Thanks, Rob.
Coming up next, part one of our special two-part discussion regarding the future of higher education. Stay with us.